Here we are again, another Resurrection Sunday. There are maybe, I just think by guests and our children, 400, maybe 430 people. All of us here as a community in the same place, but each of us as individuals bring our questions and our experiences to this moment, to this time. Some of us might be wondering why. Why in heaven's name are we here? Some may have felt coerced by tradition, expectation, or parents. Some are tired because this holiday weekend has afforded all kinds of opportunities to enjoy the weather and do things that we haven't been able to with that crazy weather we've been having. Some of us are here for an expectant word, a word to penetrate the reality of our lives right now that seem to be in chaos. We're confused about things, depressed perhaps, anxious about many things. Some of us are here with questions about why bother. Every day we hear another story or we read another internet article on the worthlessness of the pursuit of faith and religion. So there are many questions floating around here today. Doesn't bother God at all. All of them are welcome. But if you would allow me, let me ask you some questions around which all of us may ponder for a moment as a way of entering into this story of question making. The first one, in what do you trust? In what do you trust? Secondly, in what do you have faith no matter what happens? In what do you have faith no matter what happens? What are you grateful for? What are you grateful for? And the last one, with all the thoughts and feelings evoked by this service, these questions thus far, what healing opportunity is emerging even now in the midst of these questions? I'm just going to take a time of silence. Let's ponder those. This past week, I was invited to a consultation hosted by the Ottawa Carleton School Board. It was a consultation called Leading the Way into Creativity. The school board has launched a particular new initiative that is seeking to animate creativity in its classrooms, in its pedagogy, in its processes, in the students. Radical creativity. The guest speaker that was invited to come, some of you may know, none other than Margaret Wheatley. Margaret Wheatley is a Harvard-educated behavioral scientist, does organizational behavior, life sciences, and travels the world, is present in almost 40 countries, innovating new ways of bringing people together in conversation, an exploration of what really matters, of how to recognize and affirm the humanity of one another across cultures and customs. She invited us into conversations with people that we did not know. There were probably 500 people there. And Now, one of the things that she shared with us before inviting us into questions was what she was learning as she traveled around the world. One of the things that she realized is that in many of the so-called developing countries, there is no separate word in many indigenous languages for art. It is considered a natural part of the expression of human pathos and creativity and imagination. There's no separate word for it. In fact, it's believed that all can do it. There's not a separate category for artists and non-artists. She says that behavioral science and educational experts are recognizing that children up until the age of 5 are naturally creative. Will draw, will play, will imagine, will do all kinds of things that express their being and their questioning and leaning into the world. And then she said, in much of the West, our school systems drum that creativity out of them and separate them into specialized categories of those who are creative and those who are not. She shared a story of her travels in Botswana, I think it was. She sat around listening to stories of deep pain. Those who were orphans, AIDS orphans, those who had been ravaged by war, refugees and others. And there was deep, deep weeping and wailing. And at the end of the sharing, as people generously and hospitably hosted one another's story, she said, all of a sudden, they broke out into song. Song that was so jubilant, it seemed discordant with what they had just shared. And then she said she realized that what they had done is metabolize their grief into joy. Because in that they found not only strength, but purpose and the permission to create something good out of pain. This story from John's Gospel is an invitation by the Spirit for us to metabolize pain into joy. For us to understand the reality of the human condition and to see where does the good news of the gospel fit. So all the questions that we have been asking ourselves, including those four that I invited us into, have to do with this text in some way. For this is a text of questions. Some may ask, why is Mary there all by herself in the morning? We learn fairly soon that she has gone, and from the other Gospels, to render to the body its due regard and honor. She comes and finds the stone is rolled away. She runs and calls for Peter and the other disciple, and they come running back. An interesting little narrative description. They have a race. Here's an Olympic event right in the resurrection story. But one outran the other. Are we supposed to think the beloved disciple is faster? Or a little competition between them? But he doesn't go in. He looks, but he doesn't go in. Peter goes in. Peter goes in and looks, sees what's there, and leaves. Why? Why did he not see what the others saw? The other disciple goes in and looks, and the text says he believed and left. But they had not yet realized that the scriptures that Jesus must be raised from the dead. Why did he believe, and what did he believe? Mary returns a second time. Four times in the text, we're told that Mary is crying, is weeping. Mary is expressing the grief that all the community feels for losing the one they had been following for 3 years. Remember, Jesus did not only have the 12 disciples, had women disciples and others also followed him, children and others. Weeping. And when she sees the angels, did they just appear for her? Or did Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved just didn't see? Interesting questions. I think what it speaks to is the fact that here in this sanctuary and around the world, we come to this story with varieties of experiences and expectations, and we do not see what each other sees. The angels in the story speak to Mary and ask, "Why are you crying?" It's probably at that moment, as a reader, I want to go, "Duh." What kind of question is that? Our leader, our Lord, has been crucified. Our Lord is dead. Don't you get it? But isn't that an interesting question to you and to me? Why do you cry? Or if you don't cry, why don't you cry? Why do you cry, if ever you cry? You cry only when you are wounded and wrong is done to you? Do you cry when, disappointedly, you do not get the promotion or the house or the car or the dress or the suit or the shoes you wanted? Do you cry when the news stories repeat again and again the wanton, rampant killing of innocent people across the Arab world? Do you cry when you hear stories of starvation and mutilation and disappearance and the stark reality of life on many of our Aboriginal reserves across the country? Do you cry? Why are you weeping? And if not, why are you not weeping? Mary says, "I'm looking for the Lord. They've taken him away. I do not know where they've taken him." It's almost here I could imagine the angels looking at Mary. Just imagine with me going, "Whoa." The text says Mary turns around and sees Jesus but did not realize it was him. When we don't see well, when we have not fully understood, even what is familiar gets skewed. Mary turns and looks and mistakes Jesus for the gardener. That may seem like an innocent reference, but I like it, because it assumes that those places are tended by gardeners. Not only does it assume that, it reminds us of the first, this is John's intent, I believe, the first garden. The Garden in the faith story of the Jewish people, the Garden of Eden, the garden that symbolized creation, as it were. For here we are given an illusion that a new creation is coming. Something new is breaking forward into our reality right here. Mistakes are for the gardener. Mistakes Jesus for the gardener. Jesus asks the same question. I'm not going to be as impertinent with Jesus. Mary, why are you weeping? Okay, Jesus, you can say that. You can ask that. Because he follows that up with the question, whom are you looking for? And that's part of the question I was asking us before. What really matters to you? What are you looking for? Whom are you looking for? What is your soul crying out for? All of us are searching. Make no mistake. We're not conscious that we are searching, but we are searching. And clarifying that for which we search is an important step toward being able to receive the gifting of God. There are gifts in these questions we ask. Whom are you looking for? Mary is looking for Jesus. Who are you looking for? Ultimately. That exchange is an interesting one because Mary doesn't realize and come to a recognition of this Lord whom she has followed him. It's not important to get into the details with the light coming up in her eye. Those are irrelevant questions, I think, because it's not until Jesus speaks her name. The Bible tells us that God knows our name. Going back to the garden illusion, God in cahoots, as it were, with Adam and Eve, offer names to creation. Naming indicates relationship. In this particular case, Jesus speaks a name he had spoken so often. In that, Mary recognizes the cadence of love. Something new had broken into her being, and she recognized that call. Jesus speaks your name, calls you to recognize that same cadence of love, that same relationship. It's difficult. World-renowned writer and poet Annie Dillard writes in one of her books, "I have no problem with miracles. I am a long way from agnosticism and I no longer even remember how a lot of things that used to be problems for me were. But that isn't the question I struggle with. To me, the real question is, how in the world can we remember God? I like that part of the Bible that lists kings as good and bad. Suddenly, there comes this one, King Josiah, who orders the temple to be cleaned and inadvertently discovers the law. This happens after generations of rulers and after the Israelites followed God through the Exodus. Somehow, they had forgotten the whole thing, every piece of it. A whole nation simply forgot God. That famous prayer, I will in the course of this day forget thee, forget thou not me, O God. There's a lot in our living, a lot in our influences, a lot in our own doubts that have caused us to forget God. I'm not talking about, I believe there's something out there. To forget God. In other words, to be in relationship with God. There's much that distracts us and diverts us, and it's not accidental. We are flooded in our world with more information than we know what to do with. Remember at the advent of the telegraph, it was Thoreau who observed that when the first telegraph messages were sent, that suddenly there was an abundant flow of information that might not really be related to those who receive it. Before, communication was direct. How are you doing? Can you come to this party? Can we meet and do this? But there was a flood of information that is not directed to you or to me. It's just put out there. And there's so much of that information, Neil Postman says, that it creates what he calls a low information to action ratio. In other words, we hear so much, but what do you do about it? And it causes us to be fatigued in our compassion and fatigued in our interests. We need more and more opportunities to be in conversation with each other, to sit and to really listen what is going on in our lives and in the life of the world. Where is God at work? Why does this matter? We know a lot about all kinds of things. And Postman goes on to talk about, when you have all this information, what do we do? Do we act on it? No, what we do is find ways to divert our attention and amuse ourselves. So we create trivia games and television shows in order to amuse ourselves with the information. But what do we do with it? How does it bring us closer to one another? How does it help us host each other's grief? How does it help us confess this faith that will bring life and hope and purpose and direction? These questions lead us to deeper places. If we ask, whom are you looking for? It is the vocation that is given to Mary. The vocation to go and to tell the news, because I have not yet ascended, says Jesus. Jesus says to her, in our Bibles it may not be as clear, it says, don't hold me. But really the language, the Greek says, stop holding on to me. She had already flung her arms around him. Don't hold me. You can't hold on to the way things were. What you are to recognize now is that all that I have taught, all that I have modeled, all that I have preached is now been vindicated by God in raising me from the dead. Vindicated. So go and love your enemies. Go and care for the poor. Go and tell the world about the righteousness of God. Go and struggle in society to turn it upside down so those who do not have will have enough. Those who are in power seeking to close their fists around all that is necessary for life, to the detriment of others, challenge them, protest it, do as I have done. All that Jesus represented, all that he said and did, this is what Resurrection Day means. That was true. God says, you saw what he said? Do it. You saw how he lived and reached out to those whom society would have nothing to do with, the sinners as they were, the marginalized, the vulnerable. You saw that? Do it. That's how resurrection works. Don't hold on to me privately. Mary says, Rabboni. It's not really exactly teacher, it's my Lord. And it's not too long before my Lord becomes all mine, 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 mine. Before we want to own our own piece of God for ourselves, to manipulate as we would have. Jesus says, don't hold on to that. This resurrection life is pointing you in the direction of my testimony, of my work, of my mentoring, of my proclamations. Do that. Practice resurrection. We don't have to believe in resurrection. We get to believe in resurrection, because it is the secret of the life that we observe and live and point to in the hope of our world. That's vocation. Our Easter resurrection vocation comes by asking questions like, what am I here on earth for? What does God want me to do with what I have and who I am? How am I serving the example and teaching and modeling of Jesus? Vocation comes from outside of us as a call. These are the gifts of resurrection questions. Keep on asking resurrection questions. Resurrection, for some people, they want to argue, was it bodily resurrection? Was it spiritual resurrection? Was it just imagination of the disciples? You know, there's a place for those kinds of discussions. The only thing I would say is this. We need to be less arrogant and more humble about our vantage point here two millennia later. We have to ask, what did the original disciples in the community of faith mean by the word resurrection? It's not a new word. Many of the Jews believed in bodily resurrection of the faithful at the end of time. What has changed is that those Christians who followed this Jesus and started to talk about resurrection of this Jesus have reinterpreted it as one person, has signaled a new age. And the only way in which they intended it, now we can take issue with it and disagree, but they intended it as bodily resurrection. If it were something else, they would use different words, as we see when they speak of Peter, whose spirit has come to them in Acts. They would use other language. That's what they meant. I say, instead of arguing over exactly what this was, I want to challenge all of us to recognize that whether or not what kind or form of resurrection you believe in, I happen to believe in bodily resurrection, but whatever kind of resurrection you believe in, we deny the resurrection when we fail to practice the way of Jesus. When we fail to inaugurate that which Jesus has signaled is now open for all by the way we live, by the way we serve, by the way we forgive, by the way we show mercy, by the way we receive the grace of others, by the way we struggle for justice, by the way we make peace, by the way we are intentional and conscious and conscientious in studying the issues that impact our country, by the way we vote. We practice resurrection by seeking to extend that which Jesus lived, taught, and died for. So don't get stuck if you're not sure exactly how to look at this resurrection. Come together in faith and let us wrestle with one another about how we practice the way of Jesus. These are the gifts of the questions we ask at resurrection. Amen.